Welcome to the Ipsos Politics Talk podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. Well, it's been a big, busy week at Ipsos Towers with our record-breaking poll this week showing the Conservatives on 20%. But we also had the small matter of the budget yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday. And so go through some of the numbers and some of the wider context of that budget and to explore where it may take the political situation in election year. I'm joined by my colleagues Holly Day and Cameron Garrett. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Kieran.
Nice to have you back after you've been chilling out with some competitor podcasts I've seen.
Nowhere near as big as this illustrious podcast, Cameron. But yeah, it's been a busy week with the record-breaking poll. I've seen Holly's face on LinkedIn whenever I switch it on. It seems to be at the top of the feed all the time based on various people liking it. So No, it's been a busy week. But obviously, we had the record-breaking poll at the start of the week. For those that don't know, obviously, Conservatives on 20 points, as I've said. Lots of attention on that, but things quickly move towards the budget. So, Holly, what did you make of some of what we saw yesterday?
Yeah, there's nothing like a budget to bring us back together. It's nice to be back. A few headlines. I don't know what to call them headlines, because when the entire thing is kind of briefed, slash leaked, slash fully released, although not for the 2 hours that it took him to read it out, there's not that many things to pick up on, although a few of the headlines relate to tax, didn't they? So we had national insurance coming down again, another 2p, as it did in November, the classic fuel duty freeze that I think has been happening since about 2009, mm-hmm. So that one's a bit of a given. Alcohol freeze as well. The child benefit threshold was rising. I think that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on, because that was one that I don't think was necessarily trailed, that raised a few eyebrows. Household cost of living support extended for another 6 months. Seems like a bit of a temporary fix, maybe a sticking plaster, but nonetheless, it's been extended. And the ISA allowance extended as well, so people can save an extra £5,000 in the UK. So a few things given away by the Chancellor. Where he's going to get that money from, he gave us a few clues. So a vape tax, scrapping the relief on holiday homes, which got a few laughs for the digs he was aiming at the opposition benches. Air passenger duty for business class flights has gone up as well, so it's going to be a bit more expensive to fly first class. I think the big one, though, was the reform to non-dom status, and that's obviously something that the Labour Party have been talking about for quite a while now. The Conservatives have taken that, which potentially leaves Labour in a bit of an economic hole, I guess, for when they're responding to it, don't you think?
Yeah, because they'd kind of been using that to set up some of their spending, which they want to do if they were to win the next election. And Rachel Reeves doesn't want to do anything uncosted. So she's kind of going to be in a hole trying to find where she's going to find that money from for if they want to increase public spending if they were to win. And I think that's probably, they've kind of set a trap for Labour there, basically. A bit of politicking.
Well, it's mainly a trap, of course, because Labour don't want to reverse the tax cut.
Yeah.
So, you know, Labour could just say, well, we're going to put the taxes, national insurance back up again, and that's how
then
we're going to do
it. Then the Conservatives can say Labour are going to raise your taxes.
Which, of course, is the argument they want to have in election year. So, yeah, they're going to have to find that money somewhere else, aren't they?
Yeah, essentially. So I think Wes Streeting said that Rachel Reeves is a chess player, so she's already three steps ahead without saying, giving any answer. So some nice spin there. But I think it's been interesting from the media reaction to the budget. It's kind of been a bit of lack of enthusiasm towards it. There's not been your traditional reaction from the media where they're all kind of happy about. Remember George Osborne, they had him like slaying the dragon or something after a budget. There's been none of that this time. And I think it kind of reflects where public mood is at towards Jeremy Hunt. Our polling earlier this week had just 22% satisfied with the job he's doing, which bar Kwasi Kwarteng, who hit 12%, that would have been the lowest since Ken Clark in 94. So the public aren't particularly infused by Jeremy Hunt in the first place.
My suspicion is this is less about Jeremy Hunt and more about the Conservative Party. We know that sort of at back end of last year, I think it was 68%, I think it was, said that the Conservatives are doing a bad job or have done a bad job managing the economy. So I think that a lot of that feeds through to his ratings. And also when Rachel Reeves is preferred as the most capable Chancellor as well, isn't she? By a decent margin, I think, is it 14 points?
15
points. So and when you actually ask people to spontaneously sort of name different sort of shadow cabinet ministers. I mean, she's one of the ones they do name, but she's not that well known either. So I think that there's a sort of element of Labour being more trusted on the economy, and that sort of feeds through to some of these numbers too.
Yeah, I tweeted out yesterday about how Rachel Reeves had the 15-point lead and then Jeremy Hunt was on the same figure as kind of John McDonnell was. And someone actually tweeted back and said, well, Rachel Reeves is on the same figures that Ed Balls were. Like, she's not necessarily winning them over. It's kind of Tory weakness there.
I think what struck me from the budget is just some of the noises coming out in the coverage this morning. So there's a lot of sort of think tanks or different banks like Citigroup had a response out today, effectively querying the numbers longer term. And I think this is something that many commentators, we had Torsten Bell on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. He's been banging this drum for a while that, okay, you can make these sorts of announcements, but it's all a little bit of a fiction because the spending cuts that are penciled in aren't really sustainable and a lot of ministers don't think they're deliverable anyway. So that view was out there, but it didn't feel very widespread. Whereas now you're seeing sort of news bulletins leading with a lot of those questions about, okay, fine, these tax changes have been made, but actually is the long-term picture of the economy or how the economy is going to be run deliverable? And I think it's going to be interesting over the next couple of days to see if that persists, because that's a real problem for the Conservatives. There's not a lot of faith in them at the moment. Like, all joking aside, there's not a lot of goodwill or trust around the Conservatives' plans. So if there's this idea that the Conservatives want to have an argument about tax and who's going to keep your taxes the lowest and feed that into the cost of living, but if the wider perception is, well, your general plans aren't working anyway and don't work, then that might undermine a lot of those arguments. But I mean, Holly, what do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned some of the reaction this morning, and I saw the Resolution Foundation tweet out that since 2010, the UK has had the weakest GDP per capita, the lowest wage growth, and among the highest unemployment since World War II. So as you said, now people have got the longer term numbers and they're actually digging into them. Yes, tax cuts might get some news headlines, and they're talking about the money that might be in people's pockets. But if you look over the period of not just the last Parliament, but we're talking about since World War II in a lot of the coverage I've seen, it's not a great long-term trend to have a headline of as a reaction to your budget. I mean, taxes are rising less slowly than they were. It's bringing them down, but they're still rising and are going to continue to do so until 2028. This is the first time since World War II that at the end of a parliament, households in real terms are going to be poorer than they were at the previous election. So if you're asking voters to make a choice based on how they feel, and if they feel like they're better off, which is, I think, is the argument that we're seeing the Labour Party make in reaction to the tax cuts, given they're the ones that are potentially, if they weren't going to have to deal with it afterwards. The coverage today compared to yesterday with those kind of snap announcements has not been quite as favourable. And we see from the public, when we talk to them about tax, I mean, it's not something that people tend to think about on a day-to-day basis, but when we ask them the types of taxes that they want cut, national insurance isn't particularly high on the list. It's things like income tax up to a certain threshold. It's things like council tax, which increasingly has become more important to people because they see that on the bills on a monthly basis. It's going up. It's going to continue to go up. Local government are struggling with funding, so they're probably going to have to put it up again. And it's those sorts of taxes, as well as things like interest rates, when people are thinking about having to repay their mortgages or going on to new rates, that I think the public reactions that I saw yesterday, those were the things that they were like, hang on a minute, where are the announcements on those? Where's the good news on those sorts of things?
I think national insurance is probably quite a tricky tax for people to get their heads around. I mean, everyone knows they pay it. I mean, most people, I suspect, pay it through PAYE, and it sort of comes out of your pay at the end of the month or whatever. But I think whereas income tax, there's a sort of general understanding of the different thresholds for different amounts of, you know, earnings and so on. National insurance seems a bit more, arguably a bit more cryptic. I think the council tax point is a very important point because, you know, you can run on tax cuts, but ultimately, if you're seeing your council tax bill go up 5% every year, then it's a difficult one. But let's talk a bit more about tax in detail in some of our polling this week, because I think, Cameron, our polling suggested that when you present people with a binary choice, and arguably it's not a binary choice, but between more money for public services and increased taxes that you personally pay, versus essentially the reverse, so less money taken in tax but less money for public services, public seem a bit split, don't they, in our numbers?
Yeah, public opinion is around a third for each, basically saying whether they want increased spending on public services or reduction in taxes. And actually, when we ask people what's going to decide your vote at the next election. What is coming out at top is the NHS, basically. People bringing up public services, and we're seeing that rise in our issues index as well. So for all of talking about tax cuts and whether that's going to win them the next election, there maybe is not enough talking about how their plan for public services and what's going to happen there, because the public have really noticed it. About, they just think the country's in a bad state, and public services in general are.
Yeah, so I wrote a piece for the Evening Standard this week, and it was essentially off the back of Rishi Sunak's statement on the steps of Downing Street on Friday, talking about extremism and threats to MP safety, which of course are very important topics. No one would dispute that. But I think there was a lot of response to that, and some commentators suggesting this could be a quote unquote Gaza election and things like that. And the premise of my piece really wasn't to sort of say those things aren't important, because they are, but just that I think it's the bread and butter issues of the cost of living and public services that are why the Conservatives are where they are, for a start. And also, I think it's going to be the party that has a solution to those sorts of issues that looks set to benefit at the next election. Of course, Labour's more trusted on both of those issues. I think I'm probably more sympathetic than most on the Conservatives going big on tax cuts, just because it's the one tangible lever they can pull. And now we could talk about the overall tax burden, and rightly so. That's probably the biggest problem they've got, for the reasons we've stressed. If council tax is going up, if your threshold is being frozen, fiscal drag means you pay more tax anyway, and all this sort of stuff. But they can't pull a lever that overnight turns the immigration policy into one their supporters want. They can't pull a lever that overnight sort of cuts waiting lists to the NHS in half or something. What they can do is cut taxes and have an argument with Labour about spending. And my suspicion is it might be that there's nothing the Conservatives could do, and that idea that it's time for change has just set in, and we see that 69% say it's time for change. It might just be that that's just the way it is. But I think that having an argument about spending and tax probably feels like the way they could grind a 20-point lead down into something closer to double digits.
I think cutting national insurance again allows them to tell a bit of a story, like in the Autumn Statement, cut by 2p, another 2p, look, we're making progress, stick with us, don't go back. And maybe Jeremy Hunt's already been talking about post-election, like, we're scrapped national insurance, and quickly reversed.
We rolled back a bit on that this morning. That's what I was like, it would take a really, really long time.
Yeah.
But that means when you have a manifesto that says X, Y, and Z on tax, you can point to that.
Yeah, exactly.
You do. Whereas obviously Labour's strength is on the, as I've said, the 20-point leads or thereabouts on the cost of living and public services. So they're going to want to talk about those things because they're fertile ground alongside that time for change discussion. But again, it's about, okay, building credibility for that. I thought it was really interesting in our polling, I think it was this week, that 4 in 10 think taxes are going to go up regardless of who wins the next election. But actually, when you ask who's going to put more money into public services, people overwhelmingly think Labour are more likely than the Conservatives. So I'm not quite sure where they think that extra tax the Conservatives are going to bring in is going. But I mean, that does show a real problem for the Conservatives. Let's look forward a bit, because ultimately it is election year. To me, this budget felt as significant for setting the table for some of those arguments that are going to happen as the measures in it itself. Where do we go from here, Holly, do you think? What next?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because the economic situation at the moment, either party, whoever was in power, would struggle looking ahead to the next election, given the giveaways that we've seen in this particular budget. Whoever is in power following that next election is, I think, inevitably going to have to, they're going to have to find some money from somewhere, right? So that's either going to mean raising taxes, cutting public expenditure. Neither of those are probably things that you want to do just as you enter office. The problem they've got is that narrative is set in, I think, in the public mindset that the economy is just in a really bad state. Mm. I mean, at the moment we're polling 78% telling us that the economy is in a poor state. That is quite a high number. I feel like a lot of the numbers we talk about on these podcasts in the past year have all been record-breaking numbers.
I always say, though, and it's like a cliche that I always come back to, but if you go out on sort of an average high street and you stop 8 out of 10 people and they all agree on something in this country, it just tells you the strength of feeling. I mean, I used to say that about the vaccine rollout, because that was something that was overwhelmingly seen as going well. But it's rare that you get a consensus like that. And so I think the fact that there is this overwhelming negativity is important. It's also a tricky one for Keir Starmer and Labour, I think, a little bit. Not in terms of winning the next election necessarily, but just how do you approach that election and the immediate aftermath? Do you try and inject some hope for the future that's going to inspire people around, you know.
You don't want to raise expectations too high.
A vision, yeah, but you also want to get people
expectation
out to vote.
Management.
But you want to get people out to vote at the same time, right? So you've got to have this, I think you've got to have this kind of, I mean, Barack Obama was a generational politician, of course, but like he had this good knack in 2008 of being able to hammer the sort of the Republicans and George W. Bush, obviously John McCain was his opponent, but and say, oh, this is why they're terrible, but actually we can change things. There is hope for the future, and sort of getting that balance right. And I think that I would suggest that's a challenge for Labour in this election. You want to play on that negative mood to get, you know, to win the election, but I think you also want to build some sort of popular support around you and your agenda, because otherwise it's easy to see how Labour can become really, really unpopular in office really, really quickly.
And to deliver.
And like, I know, win the argument in front of you, of course, and you know, they'll just want to win the election first and foremost and that sort of thing. But you know, you can imagine very easily how they'll be battered from left and right if they don't sort of build some sort of support for an actual agenda.
Well, at the moment, when you ask the public who they blame for the situation that we're in, they give responses like COVID, like Brexit, like Ukraine. They also, a significant proportion, I think a majority, blame the last 14 years of Conservative government, Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng specifically, and Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt specifically. If Labour then come into office, if those things are all still in existence, they're going to be the ones responsible. So they're going to start to probably appear on the list if they don't turn it around quite quickly. Yeah. They're obviously significantly ahead in the polls at the minute, as you said at the start, Kieran, in our latest political monitor by 27 points. But the closer it gets to an election, the more they're going to have to come up with a tangible plan and explain how they're going to fund public services if they're telling us they're going to fund it. We spoke about at the start that they've lost the option of the non-dom reform, given the Conservatives have taken that away from them. So their strategy in the coming month is going to be, it's going to be really interesting to see where Rachel Reeves goes. As you said, she's been quite strict on telling other shadow cabinet ministers what they can and can't say in terms of where the money's going to come from. So until we get to that point, it's kind of tricky to call how the public are going to receive it, because I'm not really sure where she's going to find the money, what the messages are going to be, because you want to inspire people and not just kind of coast along because the other guys aren't doing that well.
You know, let's not over-exaggerate it. I always say, like, our poll showed Labour 27 points ahead, right? So you should overstress some of the challenges that they face in that context. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, you've still got to, like I say, win that popular support for an agenda that you have, and then, you know, try and build to that sort of manifesto phase. But Cameron, what do you think about some of these?
Yeah, I think the ball is kind of with Rachel Reeves, as we've been saying. I'd look forward to seeing what she comes up with and polling it.
And also, you know, if Labour are to win the next election, we always should say if even now, you could spend a long time blaming your predecessor. That's the first rule of politics. You know, George Osborne and David Cameron would talk about Labour crashing the car, or what was it, not fixing the roof while the sun was shining. And stuff
the note
like that.
Left with no money is still a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
It's interesting how the mood is, where we're polling around New Labour, the mood has changed against them. Now they're kind of starting to be more, the public are starting to be more positive about figures from that era, which is quite interesting, I think.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week's Ipsos Politics Talk podcast. Big thanks to Cameron Garrett and Holly Day for joining me. As ever, it feels like a very, very busy week for us here in Ipsos Towers. But do stay tuned for more podcasts with external guests and us, our good selves, in the coming weeks.